welcome to Ray and Tay today. It's Friday. Welcome to Ray and Tay today. I'm Ray. That's Tall Rayside.
And I am Tay, Eric Taylor. And man, the kids are out of school. It is officially the holidays. And now it is time to listen to some great sports talk, man. So you want to join us on the journey, the adventure? It's 718-664-9098. Ray and Tay today at gmail.com with your emails. Tweet us. Check out the podcast. Hit us up on Facebook, and that's Ray and Tay today. RAEANDTAY today. And yeah, man, we appreciate all the love, and we're enjoying it. So just keep on enjoying it with us, and we'd love your calls and your. I might have to throw out some fantasy advice to the fans today, Ray, you know, because I got some quandaries in our battle coming up. But I want
yeah.
you to know how we rocking on the show, man, how we rocking.
We'll get into that. So we'll go through our breaking news, and then we'll quickly run through the NBA. We had some interesting games last night, and we've got some interesting games this weekend. And then from about a third of the show on, it's all football. So we've got six critical games that we're going to review about playoffs, talking about playoffs and the playoff implications, especially in the NFC where we've got five teams tied at 8-6. When we go through
that. That's what it's all about.
Yeah, absolutely. And actually, right before we go through the playoffs and the playoff scenarios and those big six games this week, we're going to go through our top five because it's Friday. And that means top five Fridays. So this Friday, we're talking defense. We're talking defense. We're talking cornerbacks. So we're going to go through Ray and Tay's list. Each one's going to have his own list of top five NFL cornerbacks of all time. And there'll be some new kids on the block that might want to break into that list.
Yeah, it's a passing league, right? So we had to shut down some of these receivers, man, and give these corners some love. So
exactly.
It'll be fun.
Don't stick them allowed, but, you know, we'll still give you our top five.
I can't put Jack Tatum on my list, man. What's up? Lester Hayes? I can't
Lester
put him on
the
Hayes.
List. Lester Hayes. Lester Hayes. Let's stick him.
I've never seen anybody more stick him than Lester Hayes. We got to shout out Lester Hayes, man. He was the president of the Stick'em Club.
Yeah,
but, you
know,
in the breaking
how.
News, man, I'm excited about the Pittsburgh Pirates. They signed Francisco Liriano, the pitcher, $14 million
two
years.
So
let's see if the Pirates can get over the hump and maybe finally get a wild card next season in baseball. So, you know, that was kind of interesting. This is the thing. We're not sure. We won't know until 4 p.m. tomorrow if Ray Lewis will be activated to play. You know, off the IR, Ahmad Bradshaw for the Giants in that game will be back. And also, Kenny Phillips will be back. So maybe they'll get some more tackles. You know, they missed a ton of tackles last week. This is a big game for the Giants, big game for the Ravens. This would be four in a row and three in a row at home for Ravens if they lose
yeah,
to the Giants.
Yeah, the Giants also have some other interesting injuries. Now, Bradshaw practiced today. He's still listed as questionable, but he practiced today, so he probably is going to go.
They said he's going.
Yeah, so he's more than likely going to be in there. Tuck's the only Giant that didn't practice, so he's still questionable. Going around the rest of the NFL, RG3 looks like he's going to start. I mean, it's all set up for him to start. Unless he has a setback today or tomorrow, the doctors clear him probably today, and he looks like he's going to start this weekend.
And McCoy, in that same game, LeSean Shady McCoy is back, starting at running back, and he'll split carries with Brown, and he'll be back. Vic wanted to play, but that's not happening.
Right, he's probably not. He wants to start, and he wants to be a starter in the NFL. He's playing for basically next year's contract and next year's team. They said that Torrey Smith of the Ravens might play. He looked like he's probable from that concussion. The Bills signed a 10-year extension to stay in Buffalo. They have an out clause after 7 years, and they have a $400 million penalty if they break their lease. So obviously they're not
going to
break that.
Yeah, well, they won't be going to L.A. They need a quarterback, though, because I don't know if Fitzpatrick's going to work it out. But
Chuck Pagano might start next week.
This is an interesting one, right, when we talk about these different records with AP and Calvin Johnson and then Watt and Alden Smith. Alden Smith's buddy, Justin Smith, who's played 186 straight games, he has not practiced. Elbow's hurt. Says he'll play. You have to, like, you know, pull him off the, you know, hold him back to not let him play. But he hasn't practiced, and he's definitely questionable to see if he'll play in that big division matchup against the Seahawks. So that should be kind of interesting as well.
Right. You know. Right. And that's interesting to see, because if he's in the game, that hopefully frees up Alden Smith to get those, or help get him those 3.5 sacks that he needs to tie Strahan.
But the problem is, you know, if you're not, you know, if he's kind of not playing healthy, he might not be much of a factor. So it might actually hurt them if he plays. You know what I mean? If he's kind of just rocking with a bum arm, he really won't be able to get off any blocks. That's not going to help.
That's true. And on the basketball front, it looks like Nash is practicing, and he might be back on Christmas. It looks like Amari. It looks like Amari might return. Amari Stoudemire might return the day, either the game before or the game after the Christmas Day. So the Knicks don't want to play him in a back-to-back. They also don't want to expose him on national TV if he's not ready. They want to give him probably 15, 20 minutes in his first game, ease him back in. So we'll see some great games Christmas. We'll talk about that next week.
Yeah, although I'm not feeling them Christmas jerseys, man. I'm sorry.
The NBA trying to market. You talk about not feeling jerseys. You guys have the worst jersey ever, those Pittsburgh Steelers brown and yellow bumblebee jerseys.
Oh,
those
my
are
bumblebee
horrible.
Joints? I mean, listen, they are not pretty, but, you know, hey, listen. We've played good when we wore them, you know what I mean? I think we're 3-1 wearing those things the last 2 years, so, you know, whatever. I'll rock with it. So let's talk about – you know what's so funny? We'll go to the NBA, but it's just so funny even thinking about, you know, the Denver Nuggets with that 0-for-22 with the three-pointers. And, you know, that's just a hot mess. It is really
hot. You know, it's funny, though. They went 0-for-22, which sounds outrageous. Like, it's the worst thing. They put the three-point line in 1979. And this kid, Ford, the old coach of the Celtics, hit the first one.
Chris Ford.
He hit the first three-pointer. I remember that. But
I remember that,
22 three-pointers missed is like, wow, that's a record. That's got to stand for years. Well, earlier this year, the Portland Trailblazers went 0-for-20. So they had a terrible game, and it was only a few weeks ago that they put up 0-for-20. But, yeah, the Denver Nuggets go 0-for-22. That just doesn't seem right that professional athletes miss 22 three-pointers.
Yeah.
And they couldn't all be contested. You know, maybe half of them are contested. Because you don't typically shoot contested threes unless it's at the end of the shot clock. So you're pretty much shooting more or less open threes. And to miss 15 open threes, that's a lot.
Well, I got to say, you know, this Denver Nugget team it's a little disappointing. You know, they're not really, I think, living up to necessarily what people, you know, thought they would do. I mean, you know, 14 and 13.
Yeah.
So,
star syndrome, right? They have the it's funny because the two teams that are probably swapped are the Golden State Warriors are what we thought the Nuggets would be, and the Nuggets are what
right,
we
and they're 17-9. They're playing better than anybody thought. If you want to be honest, nobody really. I mean, 17-9. They're
Action Jackson, the pride of Bishop Lachlan High School.
Hey, listen, but you know what's
credit?
Great? Stephen Curry is staying healthy, and he is lighting it up. He lit up the Miami Heat last week, and they, you know, beat them. Stephen Curry might be the best shooter, pure shooter in the NBA. And,
well,
you know,
and you put him with Klay Thompson, and that backcourt is just deadly. They would not go 0-22. I promise you that.
Yeah. Now, but let me ask you this. How are you feeling in Lob City? Now, OKC lost to Minnesota last night, so they lost their, you know, they had 12-game winning streak. But the Clippers still got their 11-game winning streak going, and I guess there's no more talk about Del Negro because they're now 19-6. Clippers are looking good.
You know, it all comes down to me to that front court. If DeAndre Jordan and Blake Griffin step up in the playoffs, because you got to figure that if they're healthy with Billups and Hill, they've got veterans that have done it before. Chris Paul, when he's healthy, is the best point guard in the league. You know, maybe you could argue he's second, he's third, top two or three for sure.
He's playing like number one right now, though.
Yeah, he's Bell, Biv, and DeVoe. I mean, he is the scorer when you need him to score. He's the passer when you need him to pass. It's like the ball's on a yo-yo for him. You know what I mean? He's got full control over the game. He's the orchestrator. He's the main man. So the question is, is that front court going to step up?
Contrary to popular belief, I am the head.
Well,
he's the
eighth
in IC is basically what you're saying.
Chris Paul is the man. So the question is, okay, so they've got veterans. They've got backcourt. They've got Chris Paul leadership. The question is front court in the playoffs, because the San Antonio Spurs last year made them look silly in the front court. They just had that veteran leadership, and it was Duncan. It was just the ball movement. But
I will say Jordan has improved. I think he's worked on his game a lot, and I think Blake's game has improved a little bit as well. And I think that they signed some nice players in Crawford and Odom, and even when Grant Hill can, you know, really get going and healthy, I think those three veterans off the bench – it changes the dynamics, you know, really the dynamics of that team. You know, they're going to miss Reggie Evans, but I think that the improvement of Griffin and Jordan, and I think the fact that Duncan's gotten older, I think that the Spurs wouldn't be a problem for them. I think the problem for them is Memphis. Memphis, to me, could wind up becoming, you know, could come out of the West this year. They look great.
Well, if you talk about the main question for the Clippers is their front court, Memphis is the best, to me, the best front court in the league. So between and Zebo, I mean, these guys are hard to handle. Now, the question for them is Mike Conley. And is he really
playing great?
The truth? Well, but in the playoffs, is Mike Conley your guy? And who's going to hit, you know, your big shot? Is it Rudy Gay? Is it Zebo? Marc Gasol is a great passer and an enabler. They could use a knockdown shooter. They could use a pure, like a Klay Thompson type, a pure shooter.
Well, think of somebody who's out there. Maybe they could sign a Rajah Bell, a Michael Redd, Quentin Richardson. Any of that sound nice?
Yeah, I think
could
I
help.
It could. I think that they don't want to shake up that team, though. I feel like they like that team.
Yeah.
Even though, to me, they're missing one piece, right? They could use that scorer off the bench and especially that shooter, you know?
Right, because Tony Allen is more of a thug-it-out defensive cat.
Right, exactly. So, but that's a fun team to watch, though. I like that team. I really like that team.
Well, how about the 15-8 surprising Atlanta Hawks?
We're
only two games back behind the Heat. That's impressive.
That team is a surprise because I thought that, you know, with Josh Smith and Al Horford, you've got very solid players. But I didn't look at either of them as being great leaders. And so bringing over Lou Williams was huge. And Jeff Ice-Teague is doing his thing at the point guard position.
And of course, Kyle Korver
coming in and shooting. Yeah, I mean that's great. That's a nice little Anthony Morrow. Yeah, Deshaun.
Who the Nets are missing?
And Devin Harris. Give him a little bit off the bench. I don't love that team as a you know, purely from a basketball sense, but I can't take anything away from them. They're doing their thing. 15-8.
Mess around and make the playoffs, so they keep it up.
Yeah, they have a problem though. Who's going to get you your tough shot? I mean, Joe Johnson was their guy last 4 or 5 years since he came over from Phoenix. But who's going to get you that tough shot? Josh Smith is such a low percentage shooter and relies on that jumper that you know, in clutch time, Al Horford isn't going to get you the points. Josh Smith isn't going to get you the points. Lou Williams, again, a good scorer, but a little bit erratic.
Well, I think they'll rely on pick and rolls and having Teague break guys off the dribble. So, you know, he's got a big first step. He can penetrate and dish, and now they're set with shooters and outside. Think of him penetrating and dishing, and then you've got Kyle Korver, Morrow, and Lou Williams as your shooters. The team's actually set up kind of nice. And Horford and Smith are very live bodies. They're really great offensive rebounders. So actually the Hawks could be, you know, a little bit more surprising than people think by not going with superstars and you know, more of a team concept.
Yeah,
you know?
But
I mean, let's look at
historically that those kind of teams fizzle in the playoffs.
They're usually first-round knockouts.
Yeah, they're susceptible to getting knocked out in the
first round. They have the Milwaukee Bucks syndrome of the 80s.
Yeah, exactly. Well, the Bucks used to go second and third round.
Yeah, but yeah, Bradley, no, they do.
Junior Bridgman. Yeah, we had Terry Cummings. Oh, man, those are some good
Moncrief,
teams.
Pierce,
Sidney
Pressy,
Moncrief, sure. Jack Sigma, Brewer, Randy Brewer. They had,
oh, man.
You know, if Don Nelson has some regrets, you know, it would be interesting. We should get Don Nelson on the show and ask him, do you regret more not winning with that Run TMC team at Golden State,
right,
or with those super
Milwaukee
stacked
teams,
Milwaukee Bucks teams, when you were a traditional coach and you weren't playing small ball and having guys like 6'8" playing center? I mean, he had a legitimate team. Sigma had just come over from the Seattle Supersonics, so
yeah,
he had Sigma,
yeah,
Brewer, Moncrief, Cummings, Paul Pressey. He had a real front court. And then obviously Moncrief.
Even
and
had Alton Lister
Richmond
for some years. You know.
Yeah, and Jay Humphries in the backcourt. I mean, that was a legitimate NBA team. They just had to deal with the Celtics and the Sixers every year.
Yeah.
But yeah, you got to ask Nelly. We got to ask Nelly. Nelly, what happened
it's hard.
To Milwaukee?
It's definitely hard. Well, tonight we got the Knicks and the Bulls, 14-10. The Bulls are first place, which might be surprising to some people without Derrick Rose. In the Central, you know, they've been playing well. Yeah, it is surprising, right? And then the 19-6, which could be surprising to some people. Knicks, I mean, think about this. The Knicks have a six-game lead already over Boston and Brooklyn.
Right, and quiet as kept.
Who play on Christmas?
You know, we diss Amari because of his play last year, but he was still 17, you know, 17. He's still good for 17-8 in a bad year. And then in a good year, he's a, you know, he's 22-8, 22-8.5. So you take that off of any team, and that team is still 19-6. Let alone Iman Shumpert, who actually I'm not sure whose minutes he takes because
he takes Brewer's minutes. That's not even a question. Shumpert is a better defensive player than Brewer, and
well,
he has
but you know the
potential.
Year you come back, the first year you come back from your injury. Is a tough year, especially for a guy who relies on lateral quickness and a guy who's athletic and defensive minded. Because unless he's Adrian Peterson, unless that's immediate blood relative first cousin.
Yeah, that could be his play cousin, and he might be able to play nice. So don't assume anything.
But
with
if
these
it's
new
not,
young
and
athletes,
he's normal.
Don't assume anything. You don't know if he's getting in the barometric chamber.
Yeah, he might
you know
be going to Germany and getting those platelets.
You don't know what these
Kobe
cats are
did
doing,
and
man.
A-Rod did. But anyway, I don't think Iman Shumpert's going to be the player that he was last year immediately following. I'm looking for him next year to contribute a lot. But anyway, 19-6 without Shumpert and Amari. So a borderline, you know, a definite all-star in Amari and a borderline, you know, sort of defensive, first-team all-defense in Iman Shumpert.
And what happened to you and Ricky talking that Brooklyn mess? The Knicks handled the Nets, treated them like stepchildren. Okay.
Well, to me, but I did say it all comes down to Carmelo. I actually thought Carmelo either wouldn't play or would only play 15, 20 minutes and be a little gimpy on that ankle. But Carmelo came out, scored 31. You realize Carmelo in three games against the Brooklyn Nets is averaging 37 a game. He scored 111 points in three games. So,
I got to say, he's the MVP so far.
Yeah,
first 20, it's been like, 25 games for most teams. Carmelo Anthony would definitely, I mean, Durant might be second.
I think Durant's the only one. I think Durant, and look, Durant, what can you say about Durant? And by the way, Durant, quiet as kept, is averaging 8.3 rebounds a game. So he's actually leading his team in rebounds, which I think is a problem. Because in the playoffs, they need to get bigger.
It is a problem. But Ibaka is stepping up more offensively, so I think that's a good thing. I think I'm concerned about Kobe and Westbrook being number one and number two in shot attempts. You know, Westbrook should not be leading, you know, or second in the league in shot attempts as a point guard and then also playing with the, you know, best scorer probably in the NBA or at least top three scorers, you know. And then you got Kobe, you know, averaging almost 30 a game. He's a freaking nut, but he's, you know, he's playing well, though. I mean, he's very efficient.
Right,
so,
he's efficient this year, and if there's ever a year where he has to score, it's this year. Kobe would gladly he wants to win his sixth title, whatever it takes, right? But he won't sit around, and use the baseball analogy, it's like leaving the bat on your, you know, not swinging, leaving the bat on your shoulders. So Kobe Bryant might strike out. Basically, the analogy is the Lakers might strike out, but it's not because Kobe didn't swing. Kobe is going to take his cuts.
And I respect that.
His way to a loss before he'll just.
And you have to respect that about Kobe. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
he's got the same makeup that Jordan has, and very few athletes have it. You know, I don't know if Durant has it. We know LeBron doesn't have it, but that sort of type of, you know, killer instinct. I'll put you away. You know, I think Magic and Bird had it as well, and it just takes a special player. You know, I mean, you've got to be able to say, I've got a team on the wall, and we're going to put them out. We're not going to let them come back if we're up 8 or 10. We're going to have them lose by, you know, 15 or 20. And, you know, Jordan just had that. And you just think that I just don't know if Kobe's going to have enough help. Nash coming back, it might not be the answer. I think that they might have to trade Gasol, even though I think it's stupid, because I think that's their biggest advantage, right, is the two big men. And then the fact is that this coach doesn't want to use their best advantage. You know, when you've got Gasol, who by himself almost beat the USA in the Olympics this summer, we all saw that, except for when he got in foul trouble. And then you got Howard. It's like you got 2 7-footers that are like the two of the most talented guys in the league. Get the ball inside and make it work, D'Antoni. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I don't get it. I don't get it. I mean, there's this fine line between playing to your talent and having a system and sticking to it. But when the clock is ticking on Kobe Bryant, I feel like you need to be more flexible and you need to say, look, this is the team that I inherited. How can I best impose my system or combine my system with the talent that I have?
But don't you think the Lakers deserve this? Because it's the arrogance, I think, of Jim Buss saying, I don't want Phil. I want it to be all me. And I'm going to do it my way and probably hired the wrong guy. Maybe the best guy after Phil, but the wrong guy for this team.
Well, maybe. But, Phil comes with a lot of headaches. Phil won 11 championships, and maybe you put up with it for two more years with Kobe, right? But Phil probably wanted to break the bank. Let's say that they would have agreed on that $10-12 million number that he wanted. There are still issues with his back, and there's still issues with, you know, he was floating the idea of potentially not traveling to road games or, you
he
know, not.
Went. I mean, come on, he would have. That's
all I'm saying
all
is.
Say,
all I'm saying
I
is.
Think,
Phil was,
I think
was
it's deeper. It's deeper and it's more personal. You know, maybe Phil snapped on him at a family dinner. Phil was snapping on his gear at a family dinner, and he got upset. Or
he's dating his sister.
That's what I'm saying. So it's real personal.
How more personal can it get than that?
That's what I'm saying. This is real personal, man. If anything, right, that's what's so funny. You would say, okay, yeah, he's dating his sister, so then that's all the more reason to definitely give him the job. So that's where I'm saying there's a personal beef between them, and this guy's it's all ego. He wants to go out on the ship, and he's going to burn, but he wants to burn his way. So, you know, the Lakers, you know, listen, this is the bed you make, now you got to lie in it, you know. And it's going to be a problem, man. But I'm excited about these, you know, these games this weekend. The NBA is really heating up, and it's definitely going to be fun, you know.
Yeah,
these Christmas games. It's
You know, and that's what it is with the NBA. People say, like, straight up, hey, it starts Christmas Day. You know what I mean? It really does for a lot of people. And I think as the NFL winds down, then people start to focus, and even us will focus more, you know, on the NBA and the NBA season. So
yeah,
you ready?
It's got a Jekyll and Hyde, right? It goes into focus a little bit when the season kicks off, but then it goes out of focus because football, and then it goes back into focus in, you know, February and March, and then March Madness, so college takes over, and then it goes back into focus.
But that's
not
how baseball is. It's the same way with baseball.
But baseball kind of dominates the summer. But I feel like
well, no,
because
it doesn't have anything else, but it does go in and out of focus. Okay, people will pay attention to baseball when it first starts, but then you got the NBA playoffs. So then nobody's really paying attention to baseball, and then it picks up again at the All-Star break, you know, and then it takes a little hit when, you know, the very beginning of NFL training camp, and then it picks up, you know, again the last 2 weeks of the season in the playoff run. Baseball has the same thing. It definitely has the same thing. But let's jump into our Friday top five segment, top five Fridays. And we also got our Hall of Fame Friday, but we'll keep it top five. Let's look at the top five cornerbacks of all time. Now, I'm going to let you set it off because we have the same number one. Now, look, Ray and I, we have similar guys, but we wanted to just mix it up for you guys. And, you know, maybe there's more than five. So we'll each have, you know, a couple different guys, and we're going to get to these games. But let's just have some fun and talk about the great corners. And obviously, number one is the same for both of us. So, Ray, why don't you tell us who's the best cornerback of all time? Because everybody knows.
Yeah, prime time. So, Deion Sanders. So, let me just give you a little bit of stats on Deion. Well, first of all, he played for five teams, obviously. He played for Atlanta, San Fran, Dallas, Washington, and Baltimore. And he was a two-time Super Bowl winner, one with the Cowboys and one with the Niners.
Yeah.
Eight-time Pro Bowler, eight-time All-Pro. 53 interceptions puts him at 24th in the league. Nine of those interceptions brought back for touchdowns. And he was the 1994 Defensive Player of the Year. So all that's great, right? And all that sounds good. And wow, that's a top 10, top 5 guy. But here's the thing about
Deion. But all
these
guys are deeper than their stats.
Right. But here's the thing about Deion. Deion allowed you. Now, the one weakness of his game was tackling. So, okay, so he's not the complete cornerback, but that weakness was more than offset by the fact that, especially when he was with San Francisco, but to some degree with Dallas, he allowed you to play your safety on the other half of the field. So you were able to essentially overload the defense on one side of the field, and you just said, Deion's over there. D's good. We don't need to worry about that side. So he almost allowed you to play 12 on 11 or 11
mm-hmm.
on 10, however you want to count Deion, right?
Yeah.
It's like he allowed you to have another secondary, namely the safety, the free safety, was able to go play the other side of the field and not worry about Deion's side. So he was not – he didn't have the most interceptions, partially because they just didn't throw to him. He would get no action. The number one receiver on the other team was taken by Deion. And remember, he got into that thing with Deion and Andre, right? This is my house. And, you know, I built this house in Atlanta.
You shut him down, man.
Yeah. And Deion was just a man. I mean, what can you say? He just had speed. He had good enough hands. Didn't have great hands, good enough hands. He actually played offense a little bit with the Cowboys. But this guy was just.
And baseball with the Atlanta Braves.
Sure.
That's
he was
a whole other thing.
That's a whole other thing. He was a cover corner. He had speed. He had closing speed once he caught the ball.
And one of the best punt and kickoff returners, too.
Yep. So that's he and Rod Woodson were like that together. And Rod Woodson, him, and Ed Reed were the three that could take the ball back to the house. So not only were you scared of throwing towards Deion because he could knock the ball down, but you were scared. That would be the best-case scenario if you throw it to your guy and Deion knocked it down. The other scenario is he intercepts it, but the worst scenario, which he did nine times, is he intercepts and returns it for a touchdown. So a pick six to Deion's side was definitely a possibility.
Well, he was big when he went to the Niners, and they had him and Eric Davis, and they finally got over the hump, you know, because in the NFC Championship, the Cowboys and the Niners played each other 3 years in a row, you know, and that was huge, you know, when Dion and Haley went over from the Cowboys to the Niners, and then finally the Niners got over the hump and, you know, smacked up the Chargers, Steve Young Super Bowl. That was major, you know, that was really major. So now let's get into number two. I'll do my number two.
Yeah, who you got?
Well, look, you know, Deion is number one in all the hearts. This was hard. I was thinking of a new school cat, but I had to go old school. My man played from 1963 to 1978. He played for the Oakland Raiders, the Denver Broncos. Only two teams, but he's known as a Raider, right? It's interesting that he played in, you know, in a rival. His name is Willie Brown, number 24. Now, Willie Brown was one of the hardest hitting corners that, you know, you could ever see. You know, he helped the Raiders win the Super Bowl. What was that, Super Bowl IX? I forgot what number it was. But they won the Super Bowl. Len Dawson was just like, look, this is the best corner that I've ever gone up against. Willie Brown was an AFL All-Star four times and All-Pro four times, okay? Five-time AFL All-Star, pro, the All-Pro four times. Then he also was a Pro Bowler another four times. So this is an all-time player for, you know.
So also he had to do that in the AFL, right?
Well, that's
you could
the
argue
thing.
That
that's,
the NFL wasn't
passing.
Really passing the ball, but those crazy AFL teams like the Lance Allworth Chargers and the Jets, and, you know, they were throwing the ball, Lenny Dawson and the Chiefs. You know, it wasn't like
well,
it was ground and pound.
Was,
this guy was – they were throwing it.
No, that's why it was so incredible. And I think, you know, even to get that respect from Len Dawson from the Chiefs, because the Chiefs would bang up against the Raiders, and Len Dawson's like, look, Willie Brown was, you know, the best. You know, of course, for us, you know, we were a little bit younger, so we saw him towards the end of his career where, you know, he slowed down a little bit. But,
right.
You know, I always remember.
Against the Vikings in 76.
Yeah, that was Super Bowl IX. And, you know, he was one of the best, man. I got to give him credit. He had the interception return in the Super Bowl for 75 yards, and that was huge, you know. And he picked off Tarkenton. So, you know, Willie Brown is definitely number two.
All right.
Some
people's
number one. Some old school heads like him more than they like Deion. Because remember this, Willie Brown was a great tackler.
Right. So that's what the old school guys say, that Deion had a weakness. And I say that the fact that you could put the safety on the other side of the field offsets the fact that he didn't tackle.
Right,
and
right,
his
right.
ability to take it back to the house. Right. He'd get your point.
No,
so, yeah, so
definitely.
My number two.
So who you got at number two?
My number two is your boy, Mel Blunt.
Yes.
A.K.A. Melly Mel.
So, they changed the rules for Mel.
Yeah, they did. You know, they it's unbelievable. The problem for him is that, he's a five-time Pro Bowler. He won four Super Bowls, right, in the mid-70s.
Yeah.
Those two back-to-back Super Bowls. Don't talk to me as a Cowboy fan about two of those against the Cowboys. But the problem is he's playing on the same defense as Mean Joe Green, Jack Ham, Jack Lambert, Elsie Greenwood, Donnie Shell, all of those guys. So people forget that Mel Blunt was the man. I mean, he anchored it down, and that was an era. Wow, and that was an era where they were starting to pass the ball. So yeah, he was, and they changed the rules, right? They changed the rules on how defensive backs can play. And 57 interceptions, number 12 all time, four Super Bowls, right? He's the winningest of the guys on our list. Even Deion only has two Super Bowls. Now, granted,
Mel Blunt's number one.
He was on those great Pittsburgh teams, but yeah, four Super Bowls and was an integral part in those four Super Bowls. He wasn't like, you know, Robert Horry that has six championships, but really was. You know, he was a great player. No, Robert Horry contributed, but Mel Blunt was Mel Blunt. I mean, he's the man.
Oh yeah, definitely. Well, for me, man, I have to go So my number three, I have to go with the champ is here. Used to be a Redskin.
Muhammad Ali?
Then my man Champ Bailey went to, or as you like to call him, Ronald Bailey. Champ Bailey, you know, started off as a Redskin, and then they made that trade
for Clinton
for
Portis
him,
straight up.
For Portis straight up, and everybody was kind of shocked. You know, he was doing great in Washington, and then, you know, he's still at Denver and probably could retire after a year or two. But, I mean, what I love about him, man, he's got 52 interceptions all time. You know what I mean? Champ Bailey is a cover corner, 11-time Pro Bowler.
That's,
you know,
crazy.
I mean,
11 times your peer selection
to
go to the Pro Bowl.
But not just that, right? What Champ has done in a total passing era, Champ was the closest in this era to Deion in terms of being a shutdown corner. And he was a good, I mean, he's only had 3 career sacks, but he can blitz. He knocks down the balls. He, you know, pretty much is a shutdown corner as well, but a very good tackler. Champ Bailey, you know, is definitely one of the all-time best, you know, and has really held down that Denver defense and has really allowed them over the years to at least have, you know, a decent secondary. And, you know, it helps Von Miller. You'll see this year in the playoffs, it helps Von Miller and Dumervil to get to the quarterback because Champ is, you know, holding down the number one receiver. So that's my number three guy, man, Champ Bailey, you know.
Yeah,
oh,
my
yeah,
number
still,
three
still.
Guy, the pride of Michigan, go blue, Heisman Trophy winner, 1997, Charles Woodson. Still doing it. And not only that, he'll be compared with another Woodson that we'll talk about in a little bit, but he's going to move to safety and probably play the rest of his career at safety, so maybe you're going to take some points away from him as a corner. But he did most of his damage as a corner and continues to do most of his damage. He's getting recovering from that collarbone injury, so we'll see what happens in the playoffs here. But, yeah, Charles Woodson is an 8-time Pro Bowler, 7-time first-team All-Pro, and, along with Deion, is the 2009 Defensive Player of the Year. And that's a big deal when a cornerback wins Defensive Player of the Year. When you're the best player defensively in the league as a cornerback, that's a big deal. Because it's much easier for a defensive end or for a linebacker to win that award, and he won it as a defensive back. So, again, Charles Woodson, super athletic. He can rush the quarterback. He can play corner, obviously. He can slide over, as he has this year, to safety. He's your complete athlete. You know, again, you're
great hitter, great blitzer, too.
Yeah, blitz, can tackle. You know, he's the complete package. So he's my number three, Charles Woodson. Go blue, Michigan.
Well, listen, believe it or not, I've got to go back to Oakland. And I'm talking about a man who played from 76 to 89. Played for the Patriots, the Los Angeles Raiders. Imagine that. So only, you know, 2 teams. But his name is Mike Haynes.
And
woo!
If you don't know,
yeah,
go to the tape. Because he might be the
this
most
is
underrated of all the people that we have identified.
Oh, definitely.
So far.
Mike Haynes is, you know, he's somebody who, you know, played a little bit, you know, towards the end of Lester Hayes' career. But Mike Haynes, he won a Super Bowl. He's a 9-time Pro Bowler. 9. That's incredible. 2-time All-Pro. So, you know, the best in the league, All-Pro. For the Raiders, he was dominant at corner. Okay,
he won a Super Bowl. He won
that when they were in L.A. He was ridiculous in terms of he was stopping all the receivers, no matter who it was. Played big in the Super Bowl, and even, you know, when he played with the Patriots, you know, he did, you know, pretty good too. But what I most things that I remember about Mike Haynes is that he would knock the snot out of a receiver. A wide receiver would, you know, come up and try to, you know, get the ball across the middle. That was a wrap because Haynes was like, and also could keep his hand on, you know, on the ball just like, you know, when it's going up out of like nobody's business. He went to three straight Pro Bowls, which was, you know, pretty impressive, and he also led the NFL and interceptions, you know, after he went to the 3 Pro Bowls. So, I mean, to me, Mike Haynes, without a doubt. You know, some people could debate him and say he's like, you know, a top 10 somewhere. To me,
he's pure.
You know,
he's
I love Charles Woodson and those other guys, but he was just a pure cover corner. And like I said, to have those, you know, nine times in the Pro Bowl, that's impressive. So that's my number three.
So my number
four.
Right. So my number four is Dick Night Train Lane.
Old school.
And if you don't know about this cat, you need to know about him, too. He played in the 50s and 60s. So that was an era when they didn't throw the ball, which means that he didn't have a lot of chances to intercept the ball. And yet, he has 68 interceptions. The guy played 14 years and has 68 interceptions in an era that they didn't even throw the ball. So when they did throw it, he was
catching. He's like, that's mine.
Exactly. It's my house. And I live in it. So he was catching the ball. So in his first, I saw a stat that in his first 25 games, he had 27 interceptions.
Wow.
So
sounds like my man Dick LeBeau.
Yeah, Dick LeBeau's right up there in the NFL's all-time list, right? Night Train Lane is fourth, and Dick LeBeau's eighth. Dick LeBeau has 62, and Night Train Lane is 68. So Night Train Lane, really, unbelievable, especially in that era. And he played 14 years. He was a seven-time Pro Bowler, and that unbelievable stat of 68 interceptions, number four all-time. So that's my guy at number four, Dick Lane.
Well, at five, I kind of have a tie. But I got to go to Washington. I got to go down to D.C. in honor of RG3. And I got to talk about a man that played from 83 to 2002, number 28, Darryl Green.
The fastest man
easily,
in football?
Easily the fastest player in football. And his whole career was ridiculous. I mean, his achievements, please. Two Super Bowls, played great in the Super Bowls, seven-time Pro Bowler, four-time All-Pro. So he was the number one stunner at cornerback. Darryl Green would also sometimes would do punt returns, was the punt returner for the Redskins, and could just take it to the house without any question. What I liked most about Darryl Green, he just didn't let wide receivers catch the ball. I mean, you always saw him smacking it down. He wasn't big. He was like 5'8", 5'9", little guy. But Darryl Green didn't let any – I mean, even in the times when the Redskins would play against the Niners, those were great matchups because he would be on Jerry Rice all over the field. Darryl Green, if you never saw him, he was just – I mean,
and he played for, what, 19, 20 years? I mean, this guy had an unbelievable –
83 to 02, that's forever.
20 years, yeah.
That's forever. So, and then, you know, I got to just mention the tie, because the tie goes with Ty Law, who played from 1995 to 2009, mainly a New England Patriot, came over here with the Jets, did some work at KC and also at the Broncos. Ty Law, okay, let me tell you something. Bill Parcells will tell you, because that was his man, that he's got three Super Bowls, five-time Pro Bowler, and two-time All-Pro. Ty Law was definitely a great corner. He would pick it off. He would tackle great at the blitz. I mean, with the Patriots, Ty Law just locked down, you know, that side of the field, and the Patriots had no problem. You know, he picked off Manning a couple of times in that 2000 AFC Championship for the Patriots to go to Super Bowl. So even Peyton Manning will tell you Ty Law is the man, I'm sorry, in the 2003 AFC Championship.
Right.
So,
right.
You know, Ty Law, you know, he's one of the best, man. So
yeah, well, my number five, to wrap it up for me, my number five is the other Woodson, Rod Woodson, who was a track star and a football star at Purdue, played most of his career for the Steelers, played a little bit for the Niners, the Ravens, and ended his career with
the Steelers.
He got his Super Bowl. He got his Super Bowl with the Ravens, and he was an unbelievable athlete who was big enough that at the end of his career went to safety. So he played 6 years at safety. So you drop him down a little bit on the cornerback list, But this guy's unbelievable. An eight-time Pro Bowl. Sorry, he's a seven-time Pro Bowler. He won a Super Bowl. He's number three overall in interceptions, 71 interceptions.
Yeah, that's ridiculous.
In Pittsburgh, he was, even as a cornerback, he was a ball hawk. He was forcing fumbles. He was sacking the quarterback. He was returning fumbles,
blitzing,
and interceptions and for touchdowns, blitzing. And obviously his doing work on punt returns and special teams.
My man.
So, yeah, Rod.
One of my favorite all-time Steelers. Top five all-time Steeler.
Yeah, he was a pleasure to watch because he had that combination of size and speed. Because usually you can have speed like Darryl Green, but you don't usually have size and speed like Rod Woodson did. I mean, this guy was a track star at Purdue. So Rod Woodson, some of his career at safety, but, yeah, he was nice. 71 interceptions, number three overall.
Before we get to these games, real quick, I just got to say, I think my man, if he comes back healthy, Darrell Revis will be on this list. That's all I got to say.
I second
that's
that.
That's all I got to say. So where do you want to go with first?
So let's just dive right into it. You know, we got about 15 minutes in the show. Let's go into that first. Let's tick them off one by one. So New Orleans at Dallas. Real quick, the game doesn't mean much for New Orleans except for pride. They're 6-8, so they're I guess not mathematically eliminated, but there's five teams at 8-6. So
Ray doesn't want to give them a shot. They still got a chance, ladies and gentlemen.
No, they don't have a shot. I guarantee you the New Orleans Saints are not going to the playoffs. So this really is a game for pride for New Orleans. And this is to see if Dallas can actually win a clutch game and not shoot themselves in the foot like they've been doing the last 5 years or so. So what are you thinking about this game?
Well, my question is really, you know, can the Saints, can they pass on Dallas? Can they run? Can Sproles and Ingram do enough to keep Romo off the field? I think it's going to be a dogfight. I think that the Saints are up for it. I just think the Cowboys will be able to pull it out, but I think it's going to be real close. I got the Cowboys winning this one just because they're on a hot streak. And, you know, our man Witten, you know, is very close to passing Tony Gonzalez's 102 receptions all time for tight end. So he's just, I think, like six away. So he'll probably get that in this game. I think the Cowboys win 28-27 over the Saints.
Wow. I like the Cowboys winning, too. I think that DeMarco Murray is the key. If the Cowboys can take a possession or two away from New Orleans and slow them down a little bit, force a couple of three and outs, they'll win the game. I think it'll be a high-scoring game. I like the Cowboys also. I think they score 31, and they win something like 31-30. Close game, high-scoring.
31-30. Now, DeMarcus Ware hasn't practiced, but he will play in the game. So
yeah, he's a monster.
That should be interesting. All right, so let's keep it in the NFC, and let's look at the 8-6 Redskins going against the – can you believe it? Just saying it sounds crazy. The 4-10 Eagles.
Unbelievable.
With McCoy coming back. I mean, look, we're only doing this game because it's the NFC. The Redskins win. The Eagles, for pride, they play halfway decent, maybe for three quarters. I think the Redskins and RG3 coming back and Alfred Morris, it's just too much. I think – they won't blow them out, but 27-17, Redskins win.
Okay. I got 20-17 Redskins. I think the Redskins win a close game, but ultimately they pull it out.
Okay.
So let's go. Let's shift gears a little bit.
Minnesota.
And go. Yeah. Oh, you want to go Minnesota? All right, we'll do that. So Minnesota 8-6 visiting the 12-2 Houston Texans. So two teams that are right in the mix. Houston's going for the best record in the AFC, and Minnesota's trying to get into the playoffs, right? Right now they're in. On the
and we got race. A battle between two, record guys. AP's going for the rushing record, and then we've got J.J. Watt, 19.5 sacks, going for the sack record. So we could see records fall in this game. This could be an interesting game. For me, some people are thinking that they're going to hold AP under 100 yards. I've heard Schlereth say, oh, AP's only going to get 60 yards. I'm sorry. The Texans, they're kind of in a place where they're not overlooking the Vikings, but they don't need it, right? They've won a division. They beat the Colts last week. They're kind of feeling good about themselves. I think the Vikings come in there, and I think the Vikings, they pull off an upset.
Really?
I think Ponder has the game of his life.
I think the Minnesota defense steps up because they're playing on turf inside Reliant like they play. And I think the Vikings and AP with 159 yards and two touchdowns, the Vikings win 23-20 over the Texans.
Wow. See, I see the other way around. I think that the sham that is Christian Ponder is revealed. I didn't like him at Florida State. I don't think he's a starting quarterback in the NFL, and I just think that they're going to stop Adrian Peterson in relative terms, right? Maybe they held him to 100 yards, maybe one touchdown. I think ultimately the Houston Texans are on another level, and they realize that they need to get it together if they want to be an elite team, and I think they take it out on the Vikings. I think they win big. I think they win something like 30-17.
Oof. Well, I'll tell you, when it came for my picks for money, I picked the Texans. But right now on our show, I'm just, my heart's going for Minnesota. I'm rooting for them. So.
Well, speaking of your heart, let's do it.
Well, this is my heart.
The 8-6 Bengals
are coming. They're coming to the 7-7 Pittsburgh Steelers. Can I tell you something, ladies and gentlemen? We will win this game. We will run the table and then at home beat the Browns, and we will be in the playoffs this year. And you better watch out for us in the playoffs because we'll smack the Texans. I don't know if we can beat the Patriots, but we handled them last year, but we'll beat whoever we need to beat. The Steelers are coming. I'm going to tell you, for me, it's Dwyer, it's Big Ben, and I think it was good that Ben apologized to Haley and the organization, and he was just like, yo, listen, I got caught up in emotions. I didn't mean to criticize. And I think the Bengals, they just are shook. They have not beaten the Steelers, and Dalton has not beaten the Steelers, and it's been a while. And I just feel that they don't have enough. Ben Jarvis will do well. He'll get his 70 yards. A.J. Green, he'll have a good game, but I just think when it comes down to it, we pull it out. 26-23, Pittsburgh Steelers go to 8-7.
I'd like the Cincinnati Bengals to finally put it together. I think that the Steelers have got a lot of turmoil this week.
Such a hate.
And I don't think that a quick two-sentence, you know, soundbite solves the problem. I think that Roethlisberger doesn't like Haley. And I don't think that Haley cares for Roethlisberger too much. And Roethlisberger says, look, I'm going to do my own thing. I'm going to call some audibles here. He's going to try to carry this team on his back. I think ultimately he makes a critical mistake in the fourth quarter. And I think that my two guys in fantasy, Gresham and A.J. Green.
This is what this comes down to, ladies and gentlemen.
Thing.
Ray versus Tay in the championship, and he needs them to do good. And it's going to hurt him.
I do need him. I do need
it's
him to
hurt
well.
Him when AP puts up the stats on the Texans, and it's going to hurt him when the Steelers beat up all the Bengals.
Oh, no, I like the Bengals.
You're going to hear tears on Monday morning.
I like the Bengals in this game, 24-20, Cincinnati Bengals. I think that Dalton steps up. I think that he's been beat down, and he's been embarrassed by the Steelers.
All right, next game, that's enough.
Next game, moving right along.
We got the New York Giants, 8-6. Going to the 9-4, losing three in a row, reeling.
9-5.
Baltimore Ravens. I'm sorry, 9-5. They lost, about to lose four in a row if they lose this game. 9-5 Ravens. I've been going back and forth on this game. You know, I actually thought Baltimore might get it together last week, and they didn't. And I think now with Phillips coming back and Bradshaw is going to go, I think we'll see Tuck just step up and play. I think that I don't think Ray Ray is going to go. I think they want to see if they can get him back more so for the playoffs because they've already clinched. I think the Giants come in there and get revenge for that Super Bowl loss way back when, and I think they smack the Ravens because I don't know if Caldwell is still ready to say, here, Ray Rice, 20. Listen, if they give Ray Rice 25 carries, they got a shot. If not, forget about it because 12 carries is not going to cut it. Even 18 carries won't cut it. I got the Giants winning this one in a close, close battle, 24-23.
Okay, I like the Giants too. I think that the Ravens are a weak 9-5.
Yeah.
You are what your record is, but they're a weak 9-5. I think they have turmoil on offense. They're not healthy enough on defense. The Giants got embarrassed last week. The Giants tend to play well when their backs are against the wall. I think the Giants are an inconsistent team, but this is one of those weeks where they put it together. I think the Giants actually win big. I think the Giants put up 30, and they win something like 30-20, 30-20 against the against the Ravens.
Eli.
Yeah, Eli's due for a good game. He stunk it up. And sorry to Jay, but you know, the guy I played last week, Tate's cousin, he caught a horrible game by Eli. Shut out. Wasn't his fault, but hey, that's fantasy.
Before we get to the Sunday night game, man, just for my folks out here, man, I gotta say, the Bears are 8-6. They're coming out here to the Cardinals at 5-9. I'm glad the Cardinals finally stopped that streak and they won a game, but I think they lose again, and I think the Bears pull out a close one and just break the Cardinals' hearts. And I don't know if it's time for the Cardinals to make changes, whether it be head coach or whatever, but they definitely need a quarterback because you've got to use the weapons. I think they've got some talent, you know, and the tight end is young, Hasler. But I think the Bears beat the Cardinals too, man. And the Bears will stay alive for the playoffs. This is going to be interesting.
Yeah, the Bears' backs are against the wall, and they've been stumbling towards the playoffs. And if they mess around and split, they're out of the playoffs. So for a team that was looking to win the division four weeks ago, Green Bay and they are on exactly opposite trajectories. So I think
they started
the Bears,
off 7-1. Remember, I mean,
Bears
it's like,
do get it together. Yeah, I like. The
I think
Bears
they win team. Though 20. I think it's going to be like 23-17.
Yeah, I apologize to all the Phoenix, you know, area.
Yeah,
folks,
my Cardinals
and
fans
Cardinals.
And my Cardinals fans out here, they're hurting, and you know, and of course Larry's the ultimate professional, and he's, you know, he's hanging in there. But I think the Bears do it now. This is the question.
That's the we are who they thought they were game.
That's right.
We
not
are
just
who
that.
They thought they were.
But I'm segueing because right now I go from Jay Cutler, then we go to San Francisco, Seattle. Who do I play quarterback, Russell Wilson or Jay Cutler? Email us at rayandtaytoday@gmail.com. Who should Tay play, Jay Cutler or Russell Wilson at quarterback?
Yeah, I'm playing Peyton Manning, so there's no
you're
debate
fine.
There. I have Joe
Flacco.
So
look, we got the 10-3 Niners at the 9-5 Seattle Seahawks.
With probably the best home field advantage in all of football right now.
Yeah, I'm sorry, 10-3-1 Niners. You know what? I honestly think I want Seattle to win. I believe they can win. I just, for some reason, think that the Niners are on a roll, and I think the Niners are going to pull out a close one. I think the Niners win this one 23-20. I want to pick the Seattle Seahawks, but I just think the Niners defense is too much.
Yeah, I agree with you on that. I think that the Seattle defense is great, but I think that the Niners can hang with them, you know, pound for pound, hit for hit, however you want to think about it. And the difference is that I think Seattle has some players, but I think that ultimately the Niners' offense is a slightly more explosive when they're in gear. Who knows? Your boy Vernon Davis might even show up. But this is going to be a great football game. I mean, this is an unbelievable end to Week 15. I agree, though. I think the Niners are too tough. I think they win in a very close game. And, you know, Seattle's undefeated at home, so I think the Niners are getting their first loss at home.
Wow. It's funny that we both have that. But I just, you know, I've been going back and forth on that game and the Giant game, but I just feel like I'm rooting. I'm definitely rooting for Seattle, but I just think that the Niners will pull it off. So, listen, everybody have a great weekend. You know, I mean, it's the holiday season. We wish everybody, you know, if everybody celebrated Hanukkah, happy Hanukkah. We've got Christmas coming, Kwanzaa, Three Kings. You know, Ray and Tay, we're the men of the people.
We'll celebrate anything, right? If you got something
to
celebrate, we'll celebrate with you.
Yeah, definitely. So, you know, and I just wish everybody just, you know, peace in the new year, basically. So, all right, man, this is it. And we'll just have a good weekend.
Yeah, week
and we'll
15,
talk.
Good luck to all you guys in your fantasy
week
finals.
Week 16.
Anybody?
Week 16.
Well, week 15 in the NFL, though. Everybody who's you know, in their fantasy finals, good luck. And yeah, man, this is fantastic. You know, good stuff. Had a great show. Thanks for spending time
man.
With us.
Talking Woo! Sports with friends. Wow, let's go Knicks tonight.
Yeah.
Ray and Tay.
Here we are. Here we are. Yeah. This one right here is for the people.
That's dumbest.